Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, folks. This is Dave Schmidt. I'm your host here again tonight on the Sedona Connection. I want to thank everybody for joining us tonight. This is the August 30th program where you're joining us. And yes, it is 6 o'clock on the West Coast, and it's 9 o'clock here on the East Coast where I live now. So it's a little different for me, but that's sort of for where you are here in the United States and wherever you may be all around this nice, wide, wonderful world listening to this program tonight. We want to thank all of you for joining us. And then, Blanca, how are you doing this fine evening?
Doing terrific, Dave, and really glad to join you on the show. We missed you last week, so it's nice to have you back.
Well, I had a really important business trip last week, and it's best that I just not make any comments about it, but just it required me to be out of town, and it was probably just best that I didn't do the program. And there was nothing urgent. There was no urgency to have a program there last week. So, but yeah. But it's always nice to be back here, and I should be back next week. I don't see any interference problems, but this coming weekend is we have the cruise coming up, so the people that will be joining us on the cruise, a lot of them are coming in tomorrow because we leave on Friday, and we cruise and we leave out of Miami on Friday, and then we go over to the Bahamas, and we're there. We're at sea on Saturday, Bahamas on Sunday, and then we get back to Miami at 8 o'clock on Monday morning. So it's just a short three-night cruise, but it'd just be an enjoyable time together. So, yeah. So.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. People sharing time together will have a chance to chat. Probably some people from the Meta One team are going to be there too. Is that correct?
Yeah. Robert Nicole will be there from Meta One, and then so will Michael Lee Hill and his wife Sarah. And Michael's probably going to bring his guitar and do some music and singing for us. And for those of you that don't know, Michael, you know, he's more of just a guitar player than he is a singer. But he does have an album on Pandora Radio. So you can go to Pandora Radio, Michael Lee Hill, and you can listen to his music there. And that's all just guitar instrumental is what he has on there. But he does, I think he has a new album that's coming out where he's doing much more singing on it. So, yeah.
Wow. Well, I hear he's pretty talented.
He's a very, very talented guitar player. Very top-line talented professional guitar player. Yes, he is. So. Yeah, does that very well. So, well, let's see. Normally I say, how is the weather for you? But boy, it's really significant this week because most of the country is getting this deep Arctic cold coming down out of Canada. I mean, I've got people in Colorado showing that they've already got about 8 to 10 inches of snow. It's extremely cold.
Wow.
Up in North Dakota and Minnesota, it's below zero. And folks, I'm not bragging. Nanner, nanner, nanner. But it was only 87 degrees here in Boca Raton, Florida today, 88 yesterday, and it'd be 87 tomorrow. You know, 87 degrees on Halloween, it's a subtropical climate here down in southern Florida, and I'm enjoying being here. It's kind of nice, so, yeah. And I have to miss the cold climate. Remember, I lived in the Northwest most of my life, and by the time it got down to this around the year, it was just drizzly rainy in the low 40s by the time, you know, November rolls around. And it was like that for basically 3 to 4 months, and I had enough of that, and that's why I moved to Arizona. And even in Sedona, it could get cold because they are high elevation, 4,500 feet. So they're saying it's getting down to, like, you know, 28, 29 degrees at nighttime.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think it got down to a whopping 78 degrees last night.
Ooh.
I'm looking at my thermometer, which I have an outdoor, you know, notification. It's 82 degrees right now, and it's 9 o'clock in the evening. So, yeah.
So, well, for not bragging, that took kind of long.
I won't say anything about it. I'm done with that. Okay, Blanca, anything you'd like to share with us?
No, I mean, I could say the same thing about our lovely weather, but I think people are going to say, okay. So you got great weather. The trees are looking marvelous and beautiful over here, all the fall colors. But so, yes, we're enjoying life over here in the South.
Yeah, well, that's good. Well, I don't have any really specific announcements tonight, folks. There's nothing really new on the currency. I still get emails coming in with people says, well, has anything changed? I heard this source saying this and that. And I thought if anything changed, I would let you know. Okay. Here's what it is. Everything is done that needs to be done. We're waiting for the decision makers, the top three political decision makers, to make the decision to release it. And everybody that is associated with that is on blackouts and nobody is talking. So anything else you're hearing are stories, folks, just stories, okay? And a guy sent me an email and says, well, we're hearing it's probably going to happen in November, but yet we're hearing that all the arrests have to happen first. I have no idea. Those are just stories, okay? I try to make sure that what I share with you, I've got tangibility behind it, and I'm not just a storyteller about what I'm on this stuff. So that's the news. Nobody is talking, and we're waiting, and those are geopolitical decisions that are being made, and that's it, okay? So we've been, for all the 5 years now almost, I've been using Blog Talk Radio for the audio, and I was talking with Blanca earlier on this. I might be making a change over to Free Conference Call. They have totally updated their program with what they do. The main reason I use Blog Talk is because it gives people the ability to call in. And, you know, if they want to make live phone call questions and conversations. Well, we'll be able to do that also with Free Conference Call. And they also got video capability, and they're expanding their services that are there. And the biggest thing is the difference of the cost. Blog Talk costs me a pretty penny each month, and I feel like I don't get my money's worth out of it, but yet I still continue to do it as a service. So I'll let you know. I will put it out in the newsletter when we do that, but looks like I might be going over to Free Conference Calling instead of Blog Talk Radio. I'm going to take a look at that more over the next week, okay? Now, this is not yet established, but it probably is going to happen, is that I'm probably going to be changing the name. Now, I've been calling my business the Sedona Connection because I was, you know, and living in Sedona. I love that place. It's a wonderful place. I was connected to it. It was kind of, the name kind of started with me before I even started all the stuff, so I just carried it over from some past stuff. But you know, I'm not associated with Sedona anymore. I don't live there anymore, and I know I don't. And you got that nice, wonderful, you know, beautiful red rock picture in the background banner, but I don't have that here. I'm in Florida on the beaches, so I'm looking at possibly changing the name to the Cosmic Connection. And there's an interesting part around that because. What a lot of people don't know is you go into the dictionary and you look at the definition of the name cosmology. Now, technically, you'd say it's the study of the cosmos. But also what it is, they say cosmology is the study and the compilation of basically cosmological, universal, and spiritual aspects into defining our universe. And I always have a spiritual aspect to the programs. I don't share it as much here on the radio programs as much as I do in the workshops, but there's a strong spiritual aspect. And I come from that place, from what I would call the perspective of cosmology, the combining of science and spirituality. That's the better definition. It's the combining of science and spirituality, coming to a definition and a projection of how we explain the universe. And so I'm looking at possibly changing the name to the Cosmic Connection in the near future. So, but I'll keep doing Sedona Connection until I get a new banner and all that kind of stuff. So I'd have to get all kinds of new background stuff. But yeah. So Blanca, with that, anything else you would like to share with us before we go into the program tonight?
Well, we'll just have to do an inaugural show, and you might have to change your theme music too.
Who knows? Well, no, I can use that music for anything I want. I whatever, maybe, but, you know, we'll see.
I would say go ahead. Go for it.
there's no
cosmic,
hurry.
Cosmic tunes.
There's no hurry to get all that stuff done, but that's probably what's going to be coming in the near future. Excuse me. Okay, so are we ready to go into the program?
Yes, I think so.
Okay. Well, folks, I already sent out the video. This is part 5 of the workshop content. Now, you can go to my website, SedonaConnection.com, and there is a link on there that has the workshop content videos. And I basically, you know, I keep them to about 30 to 40 minutes each. And so I break them up into smaller segments in contrast to what I actually do on the workshop day. But this is part five. Now, in part four, I had basically talked about the Anunnaki and the gold and what was their significance and who they were and stuff like that. And in this one, where I broke it up, I went into a short section and I talked about the Anunnaki and the Bible and the significance of that. But most of the content tonight is going to be around who's Michael Lee Hill, how does he fit in with the Anunnaki and the gold. And then I go into A.R. Borden, his position around this as well, because of Michael's relationship with A.R. Borden and the significance of all of his materials that he is writing. So first of all, let me just talk about what I, and tonight I'm just going to discuss what is in that content program. Go to the website, go to the newsletter, and you will find that that's where the video is. And I think it's like right at about 30 minutes this week. So it gives you the opportunity, you know, to watch it and stay in touch with it. Well, here is what was really significant about the Anunnaki in the Bible. Most of you know, you've heard me say that I have a master's degree in biblical studies, so I know my Bible very well. I am not considered a Bible scholar, but I can be considered a Bible expert. And in the Old Testament, when you get into the original languages, because it was originally written in Hebrew, they had the Hebrew names that were translated God. So whenever, you know, you came through, you had, you know, like, you know, Genesis 1:1, it says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Well, you always had Hebrew names that were translated, and the two primary names were Yahweh and Adonai. Now, Yahweh was the largest name that was used throughout much of the content of the first part of the Old Testament. And when I say that, it's the historical part. Right from the beginning in Genesis all the way up till the time around King David, that historical era, the word God is primarily the word Yahweh. Now, when we were in seminary and we would always look at the origination of the Bible and, you know, who authored it and where it came from, we always had problems coming up with a real tangible evidence of who wrote the Old Testament. It was always speculation and it was kind of somewhat historical based. And for decades, we were always taught that they speculated that it was Moses was the one that wrote the Old Testament, and primarily what would be the Pentateuch, the first five books of the Old Testament in the Bible. Well, in the last 30 to 50, 60 years, they've now been having what are called these the archaeological digs of what are called the Sumerian tablets. They are discovering these ancient tablets that have been buried in the area around what would be Samaria, which is modern-day Iraq and Iran, in that region. And this is totally shifting and changing the history of that era because there's so much material that is there. And the material that is in there, they talk about the presence of the Anunnaki to the point you can't deny their existence anymore. Well, the Anunnaki comes from Anu. Anu was the king, the head of the Anunnaki. And he had two sons, Enlil and Enki. And Enlil and Enki were the two that came to earth that basically ruled over earth. Now remember, the Anunnaki came here to mine the gold. And after about 100,000 years of gold mining, and you have to also step back to recognize that the Anunnaki in their DNA have the ability to live very, very long lives in contrast to us as humans. They could live to be 300 to 400,000 years of our human years old. They came here to dig the gold. After about 100,000 years, they had kind of a revolt from them, and they said, you know, because of the slaves of their own people that they had were digging, they were masters in genetics. They basically reformed the genetics of what we would call the Homo erectus, the caveman. And then from there, you know, is what came out of what are called our Homo sapien bodies. Well, and then we became basically slaves and the gold diggers. Well, that went on for a period of time. And then after they were done digging their gold, they basically, the majority of them left the earth. But during that period of time, they established and set themselves up, and Lil and Enki sent themselves up as gods over the humans and said, you would worship us and call us gods. But here's what's interesting. In the Old Testament, the primary name for God is Yahweh, and yet sometimes we find Adonai. Before we understood the history of the Anunnaki and the Sumerian tablets, for those of us that were Bible students, we never really knew the origination of those names. Where did they come from, other than the fact that's what they were? And when Bible translators and scholars translated the Old Testament, they assumed because this is what called, quote, divine scripture, then there has to be a divine God in here somewhere. So they took the names Yahweh and Adonai and turned that into what was called the divine God, the God of the Bible. Well, what we found out, though, through the Sumerian tablets is that's not the case. Because thousands and thousands of times throughout the Sumerian tablets, we find the names Yahweh and Adonai. And who's Yahweh? Enlil, the son of Anu, the god of the Anunnaki. And who is Adonai? Enki, his brother. So you see, the gods of the Old Testament were really nothing more than the Anunnaki gods, that they were these supreme beings in contrast to us as humans. So I wanted to mention that because it's a unique shift and change. I know for people that come from a background of evangelical Christianity, that's an issue of what is called cognitive dissonance to work through. It took me months to work through that myself. I went through that same transition, but I couldn't deny the historical fact that it was there. But when I then sat down and started reading my Old Testament, and every time I came across the name Yahweh, all of a sudden now it totally made sense. Because part of the problem of the God in the Old Testament is you basically have an Old Testament God that's a schizophrenic God. On one hand, he's caring, loving, and compassionate, and the next time he's a bloodthirsty, warring killer, wiping people out left and right, massively, brutally destroying and killing people. I thought, that's supposed to be a God of love? That was always one of those struggle points for me. But when you stop to realize that it's an Anunnaki, then it totally makes sense. Totally makes sense. Because an Anunnaki being would do that. An Enlil would do that. That's part of Enlil's character, to have this deep plurality or duality part of his character. Well, that's all I want to talk about on that part. But before I go on, Blanca, would you like to make any comments around that?
Well, yeah, one of the things as I was listening to your presentation, and of course I've been to your workshop before, so I've heard you tell this story, but I was listening to it fresh because I thought, well, there's a lot of people who have not gone to Dave's workshops, and this may be the first time they hear you talking about the Anunnaki. Oops, I'm getting a little bit of feedback. Continue to. Oh, okay.
I was doing some clicking on Facebook. That was my problem. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was hearing the feedback, but so I was trying to hear it. Oh. Oops.
Go ahead.
Still getting it, but I'll just plug through it. So I was listening to it with fresh ears, and so that was the first thing that occurred to me. I said, if I was listening to this fresh, I've just heard Dave say that he was studied the Bible in depth, and that I believe you also mentioned that you were part of the evangelicals, and so here I'm hearing this, and then I'm hearing you tell the story about the Anunnaki. And, of course, this is as translated by Zechariah Sitchin, so it's his translation that you're basing your information on. And so I was thinking about it. I was like, how did he get himself to open up his mind, given his background, to actually explore these stories, to explore these myths? Do you remember the process you put you through? And the reason I'm asking is because I agree there are probably people who are right now very seated in their Bible, in their religion, who may be very hesitant to at least even explore these stories. So how did you take those steps to do so?
Well, I work primarily with Dr. Sasha Lesson, who, you know, has a PhD in anthropology out of UCLA, and he was a colleague to Zechariah Sitchin. And in the conversations I had with him, I asked him, now the things you're writing in your books, are these based on what is coming out of the historical archaeological digs? And he says, absolutely. He says, the fact that, you know, Enlil was Yahweh, that's not a debatable issue. He says, you can take the amount of material you see out of the Bible and then compare that to the amount of material that's coming out of the Sumerian tablets. And the tablets are basically 10, 20, 30 times more material. And the name is used thousands of times more times. And it's always consistently you find that Enlil is Yahweh. It's another name for him. And that's who he was. And the other thing that was interesting is, I said, you know, we always had the question of who wrote the Old Testament. And I had that discussion with Dr. Lesson. And he made a comment and he says, Dave, you can see it. It's in the Sumerian tablets. The Old Testament was written by King Nebuchadnezzar and Marduk, the son of Enki. Those were the two that wrote the Old Testament and put it together. The Old Testament is basically a compilation of what we would consider today to be the history of the ancient Israelites, who were basically the descendants and the products of the Anunnaki. All three of the world's major religions are Abrahamic-based religions. That would be Christianity, Judaism, and Islam. They all go back to Abraham as the founder of their faith. Well, in the Sumerian tablets, you find that Abraham was basically the general of Yahweh's, i.e. Enlil's armies. He was Enlil's and Yahweh's right-hand man is who he was. And so you really begin to see the consistency based on history and archaeological evidence that establishes that history. So it's not just something of a folklore or someone's, you know, someone's opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So that gave you the confidence in looking at this information and seeing what kind of stories it told, and it was syncing up with some of the things that you were finding in the Bible, and that template actually fit it very well. Now, a lot of people are familiar with, for example, the Greek myths or the Atlantean myths, and by myths, we mean those, you know, ancient stories. There's usually supernatural beings in there, ancestors or heroes, and these stories really help inform our worldview, right? Or why do people do what they do, or why is the world the way it is? They're comfortable exploring those myths or stories, but there's still a resistance, even though there's more and more information coming out from other sources about extraterrestrials or extra-dimensionals. Why do you think there's resistance to some of these stories like are found in the Sumerian text?
Well, I think part of the resistance to the public perception of ETs is, first of all, you then basically now have to have universities, research institutions, and governments admit to us that they've been lying to us for 70 years. That's the bottom line. You know, they have to admit that they are they really going to come out and admit that we lied to you about the existence of ETs? Yet we all can go back to the Roswell incident, and it's absolutely solid since then. There is a time coming when disclosure will take place. And what I've heard how it's been explained to me is the reason that they don't come totally out yet is because there's still way too much collective cognitive dissonance if the government comes out and admits that there are ETs and UFOs out there and they're very real. It has to come slowly so people can digest it on a slow basis, because if you get a massive collective cognitive dissonance, it almost produces a hysteria. If it doesn't produce a hysteria, it produces a huge, angry reaction to the government where it could create riots and chaos and stuff like that. So they really feel it needs to come out on a gradual basis, and it's starting to come out. I listened to David Wilcock, and he had talked about how the information people that work in the government, that work with around the issues of the UFOs and the ETs, that see, they allow him to tell his stories and they don't shut him down and they don't shut him off, because he's someone that people are comfortable listening to. And as people are being introduced to him, they're coming into it through their friends. A friend says to a friend, says, hey, you need to listen to this guy. And that helps people make the transition through their cognitive dissonance of the shock that yes, there are other beings out there, if they're still living in the world of believing that they don't exist. And I think we're going to see that over the next 10 years. I think probably it'll take about 5 to 10 years before we have a full, complete disclosure. And we've even heard sources through David Wilcock and the others that the reason that even the ETs themselves don't come out and disclose because they understand the shock of the cognitive dissonance and the problem that creates. And they don't want to do that. They don't want to create this massive hysteria almost that would happen here on Earth if it all came out all at once. But it's just it's coming out so much that people can't deny it.
Yes, there's a lot of information coming out if people are looking for that substantiate it. And then, of course, a lot of people, we haven't done that. We've actually seen UFOs without the glasses, or what do they call them? The ones that you use at night. The word's not coming to me, where you could see all kinds of things flying. Everybody says you put those on, you're going to see things up in the sky. So there's ways to find out about this aspect of reality. Another topic that you've talked a lot about, and you address it a lot in your workshops, is the shift and change that we are going through as human beings. And it's a shift in our awareness and a shift in our consciousness. So it seems to me that stories like, we could talk a little bit about Ancient Arrow Project and the fact that these Sumerian tablets and other information is emerging. I think it's because we are changing in consciousness and awareness that this sort of information bubbles up. And really, it's almost like disclosure is occurring as we wake up or become more aware or conscious.
And to expect
the information to come from the establishment may not be the best expectation. Rather, that disclosure is our own waking up process.
Well, that's a good transition point to going in and talking about the story around Michael Lee Hill. If you know about Michael, 10 years ago, Michael didn't even know what an Anunnaki was. He was just an everyday normal dude. He was a rock guitar musician. He played professionally for a while, and then he worked another job, just a regular job for a while. But Michael lived in the Cleveland suburbs about 4 blocks off the shore of Lake Erie. And he would, nighttime, he would go down to the shore. And he said he'd go down to the shore and these UFOs started showing up. And he couldn't deny them. So they were very real, very, very real. And this went on for a couple of weeks. And then he realized, I guess I better get my video camera out. And then for about a year and a half, almost every single time he went down to the shoreline, they would show up. And he would video them. And he had this very strong feeling and sensation. It was almost like they were showing up just for him. Now, he had no idea why. But he was quiet about it, didn't just, say much, but just shared it with some friends. But the word got out. He ended up being on the local news in Cleveland, and then it carried over to the national news. Fox News did about a 10-minute special on him. And then the next thing you know, the History Channel's knocking on his door. And it says, we're going to do a special about UFOs here in the United States, and we hear that you probably have almost the largest UFO library of almost anybody in the world. And he says, I don't know about that. All I know is that I got a lot. And then he said, well, we're also in the program. We're talking about this other younger gentleman. He was in the Marines and he was discharged because he had a blood anomaly. And so we're going to focus on you too, because his stories and his videos are very similar to yours as well. But what we would like to do is to basically have your blood tested. Well, so because it's for the History Channel, they send him back to Harvard, where they have their blood tested by the best Harvard medical professors. And Michael's blood gets tested, and he's sitting in the, in the doctor's waiting room. The doctor comes out, and Michael says, what is it? And the doctor says, well, dude, all I can say is that you're not human. You don't have human blood. The doctor basically kind of explained, he says, there's 37 different classifications we can put blood into, and you don't meet and fit any of them, not a single one. We've heard about this extremely rare blood that you have, but this is my first encounter with it and experiencing it. So he said, okay, and then he goes back home. Well, ironically, Michael then had also started communicating, emailing with this gentleman by the name of A.R. Borden. And then after the program comes out and Borden sees the program, Borden says, I can tell you all about your blood. He says, you are what is called a hybrid. You are an Anunnaki human hybrid. And your blood is basically, you're referred to as what is called a Nephilim. That's a term that is used for Anunnaki human hybrids. It's a term that's actually in the Bible and in Genesis chapter 6, verse 2. That, you know, the Nephilim were the angels that had come down from the sky and they mated with the human women, you know. So, and it's basically, because what is Anunnaki? The people from the sky. That's what Anunnaki means. They were, i.e., they came on the UFOs and as ETs came to Earth from the sky. And they had the genetics of us as humans because we were a product of them. And so they were able to mate, you know, with the women, and they created these hybrids. That's what they did. And so not only did that get established for Michael that he was that, but it also was established through his DNA. And I go into the story much more in depth in detail in the video. But what it really came down to is that Michael found out that he had DNA, that he was also an Iroquois Native American, the Iroquois Indians, from the Ohio Valley, upper New York State region. And when they traced their DNA, they came back and found out that they were descendants of the ancient Israelites of the Northern Sea of Galilee, who were descendants of the Anunnaki, is what they were. They, in essence, most of those were the Nephilim. That's where the Nephilim came from. Most of your ancient Israelites were out of the Nephilim product. I should say the Nephilim production, if that's a term to put it. Not only that, they also produced these royal bloodlines. Because the Anunnaki, when they were done mining the gold, it said that they had received a decree from what they call First Source, i.e. what we call God, that they were to create these royal bloodline families that would rule over the humans until the right appointed time. That happened when the Anunnaki were done mining the gold and the majority of them left the planet. And so that's why you hear about the royal blood. Because, yes, folks, it is a different blood. And some will come right out and say that almost all the royal bloodlines are Nephilims as well. Because their blood is very different. And that's why you always find that the royals interbreed with each other, and so that they keep the DNA within the blood. It doesn't get diluted into what they call a lesser, a lesser specimen of the high quality, royal DNA, if that's the terms that I want to use. And these royalties were basically the royalties out of Europe, the Middle East, Asia, and China. And they were the dragon families. As the royal bloodlines, they became the dragon families. And they had this massive amount of gold that was given to them from the Anunnaki, and it was the gold that was left over from the Anunnaki mining days, and they were told that they were to be custodians and caretakers of this gold and to be holding it until the right appointed time, and that they would rule over us until the right appointed time. And when is the right appointed time? Now. We're there now. After thousands of years, we have reached this right appointed time for the transition, the shift and the change that we're going through. And that's part of why all this gold is coming out. And that's Michael's role in this. That's Michael's part of this, is because he is a product of the Anunnaki. He's a product of he's a Nephilim. He's a part of that. So he understands this issue. What's really interesting also is in becoming Michael, recognizing and knowing that he was a part of the Iroquois tribes of the Native Americans, he has been looking and doing research for that and connecting and contacting with those parts of the Native Americans. In fact, Sarah, his wife, is a part of that. She comes out of that, of his historical genealogical background of being a Native American. And in one of my conversations with Michael, I was talking to him about, the Dragon Family Gold. And I have to be really careful out of confidentiality as I say this. In so many words, he was saying, he says, "Dave, let's just say there are other parts of the dragon families that have a whole lot more gold than those dragon families that are in Asia based. And I'm aware of it. We understand it. And we know where a lot of it is. But I cannot say out of confidentiality." So, yes, they are very well understanding this gold, this massive amount of gold that comes out of the dragon families. And it's almost like there were the two lines, the two bloodlines of the Enlil and the Yenki bloodlines. And it was like most of the Enlil bloodline dragon families ended up being in, the Middle East and Asia. And then the Enki sides ended up migrating to here and becoming a part of the North American, the Native Americans here of North America, the ancient Native Americans here. And they traced their genealogies back hundreds and hundreds of years, if not well over 1,000 years. I should say even thousands of years is where they traced their genealogy back. And yeah, they're familiar with all this the Dragon Family gold as well. So that's kind of it on the Michael Hill, Lee Hill story, his significance. Michael and I have continued to develop a good friendship. I'm going to see him tomorrow. He and Sarah are coming on the cruise with us, and it's our pleasure to be able to have them along, and he's going to be with us on the weekend on the cruise. And anybody that's listening to this, well, you can ask him all kinds of questions you want. And Michael's making a shift in transition, working with his 432 Hertz disc and the energy that disc is creating. That's another whole story in itself. He did cover that the last time that I had him here on the program. He talked about that extensively. So that's the part there with Michael Lee Hill. Blanca, would you like to come in and expound on that?
Yes, I was going to encourage people to go to your website if they want to learn more about Michael Lee Hill, especially if they're going to go on the cruise. They'll have a lot more background and can have a more interesting conversation with them. So I'm not sure I remember which month you had that on, but maybe you do remember so they can find it.
Oh, it was probably a good 5-6 months ago. But you go to my website and just scroll down through the dates, or you go to my YouTube page and you will scroll through all the videos and you'll see him on there. Yeah.
And also, the last thing – oh, go ahead.
Well, let me make a quick comment. If you want information on Michael, you could go to his own website, and it's michaelleehill.net. Michael, Lee, L-E-E, Hill, H-I-L-L, .net. michaelleehill.net. That's his website. Okay, go ahead.
Oh, yes. The only other thing I was going to share is that I don't know if you're familiar, you probably are, with Graham Hancock, and his most recent book is called America Before,
yes.
The Key to Earth's Lost Civilization, and he does talk about a whole chapter on the Serpent Mounds, and he talks about the Native American DNA, and so people who are intrigued by that, and even the ancient history of the Americas, that's a good book to take a look at. And talk about really flipping your worldview, this book will do it. And so it's the time. Like you said, Dave, there's a shift and change going on, and that's why these truths are starting to emerge, or these, let's call it alternative history, is coming up for us to consider.
Yep, yeah. And Michael has been in contact with Graham Hancock, and he's very familiar with it. So, yeah.
So there is a connection, yeah.
Yep. Okay, well, should we go on out and talk about A.R. Borden?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Well, A.R. Borden, Michael had just discovered him just in some of his own researching through the internet. And then, you know, he came out and he was on the History Channel, and that just totally opened up with everything with him. So Michael started a really strong relationship with Borden, and Borden took a special interest in Michael. And they had developed a very strong relationship. Now, if you want to know about the story of A.R. Borden, you go to the Wing Makers, wingmakers.com site, and you read their materials. It first starts out with the novel, the book Ancient Arrow Project. Now, Ancient Arrow Project talks about when this group called the Labyrinth Group in the ACIO find this ET disc, is what it was. And it talked about the group, how they were processing the disc and the information that came out of it. And there's a primary character in there, and that's Dr. Jameson Neruda. And then the second primary character is his boss, and his name is 15. In all of the Wingmakers materials, he's referred to as his code name, 15. Well, 15 is A.R. Borden. Now, some people had questioned, is that really true? No, Michael will tell you it's true because Borden tutored Michael for the last 5 years of his life. So Michael had a very close relationship with A.R. Borden. And even in the last couple of years of his life, Borden came out and quietly did a couple of radio interviews. And even there, he admits, he says, no, I am 15 in the Ancient Arrow Project in the Neruda interviews. So you start out with the Ancient Arrow Project, and then the sequel to that are the 5 Neruda interviews. Now, you can go to my website, SedonaConnection.com, and in the resources tab, you will have a link to that book, the novel, Ancient Arrow Project, and you will have links to the Neruda interviews. I've placed them all on my website. In my discussion that now, not only did Michael work with A.R. Borden closely, he also met and talked with Dr. Neruda. He was able to meet him as well. And he did say that the Ancient Arrow Project is a novel. But the reason that they put it into a novel, because the information is so advanced and so far ahead of stuff, and it basically exposes those that we would call the cabal. In the book there, they're referred to as the transhumanist or the transhumanist agenda. And it so exposes them that if they put it out as just factual papers, the cabal would have come up and just destroyed it all and destroyed its credibility. But you can't do that with a novel. So that's why they take the story and put it into a novel form so it can't be destroyed or refabricated. So you get the history content of what is there in the novel is what it is. And so now Borden was considered, and even in Neruda, in his interviews and in Ancient Arrow Project, they said that Borden was considered to be the brightest and smartest man in the world when he was alive. He was an absolute super genius. When he was a young man and when he entered into college, he was so bright and so brilliant that he was embarrassing the college professors at the university where he was. And they basically kicked him out of the university to protect their reputation because he was so embarrassing them and so making them look like so foolish, like they didn't know what they were talking about, that they couldn't have him there because it was destroying their reputation. And the bottom line, the universities are dependent upon their reputations to get money to bring students in. So they basically booted him out. He got picked up by Packard Bell, one of the defense contractors, and he worked with them for about 3 years. And that's when the folks at the ACIO discovered him. And they brought him on staff at the ACIO. Now, the ACIO stands for Advanced Contact Intelligence Organization. It was the government's clandestine operation that was working with ETs and UFOs. And Borden came in as their top research person. By the age of 25, he's heading up the research department of the ACIO. And within a few years later that, he's the head of the ACIO. He stayed as the head of the ACIO for over 30 years, for about 30 to 35 years. These were the most advanced scientists researching and working with ETs and UFOs. While he was there, there was a group of ETs called the Quartum, and they were the benevolent ones. They were very benevolent and favorable to us as humans, and they started partnering with Borden. They had an interest in partnering with him because the research that Borden's group was doing was so advanced in contrast to anything else that was being produced here on this planet that they were interested in the research, and so there was a win-win relationship that was there. So they had a really strong working relationship, cordial relationship with each other for close to 30 years. And Borden, as I said, ended up probably being the brightest and smartest man in the world at the time. Their research was so far ahead anything else. He had this one comment that he said to Michael. He says, "Michael, everything that you saw in Star Trek 30 years ago, all the things that we could do, we do it all for real. We're the scientists that know how to do all of that stuff. We are the scientists who understand quantum physics and how everything is energy, and so is your bodies, so we can teleport your bodies to anywhere we want to send it. We know how to take the energetic structure of your body, temporarily reshape it, ship that energy to another place here on the planet, and then slow the energy down, and boom, your body appears back in." Yeah, it's beam me up, Scotty, is what it is. Or teleporting their bodies to anywhere. Borden's group could do that. They were the best time travelers in the world. They had the ability to time travel. They understood Einstein's theory of relativity, that there was no such thing as time. Time doesn't really exist. All past, present, and future happen simultaneously. So they could do time travel. They were the best remote viewers in the world. And they also developed that process. You've heard me talk about it called LERM. It's an acronym. acronym, LERM, Light Encoded Reality Matrix. They understood that anything that appears to be physical in reality is not physical. It's a holographic illusion of energy coming together. And they knew how to make those energy patterns, those energy packets, appear out of nothing. In essence, they could just make anything appear out of nothing. Right, boom, right in front of them. There's a story that is talked about that that Borden and his colleagues went and visited some Tibetan monks, and these monks knew how to do this stuff. And as they were working with each other, it came to be lunchtime, and they were all sitting down together, you know, at a lunch table. And here were the monks, there's about six or seven of them sitting on the one side of this long table, and then all of a sudden, boom, 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 you know, their lunches started showing up and right in front of them, just like that, out of nothing, for the monks. And it said that Borden, he turned to his colleagues, he smiled, and he said, gentlemen, should we show them? And then, boom, 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 Borden and all his colleagues, their lunches start showing up right in front of them, out of nothing. They understood the physics of quantum-based energy of physics to make this stuff happen. Now, that's who he was. Later in his years, after the Neruda interviews, he basically left the ACIO and developed this organization called Life Physics Institute. And for about 10 years, he and his colleagues did this extensive study on how human consciousness interacts with what we call the electrons of matter and creates everything that there is in our universe. And they now have scientists have written books and papers displaying how everything that we experience, anything that seems to be physical, it's a product of human consciousness. It's a product of our thoughts is what it is. We create it through the energy of our thoughts, and they explain it from a scientific perspective. Now, that's who Borden was. His research was so advanced that he knew in his later years, after he left the ACIO, he started writing novels and papers and books, but he didn't release them to the public. He gave them all to Michael Lee, and Michael Lee gave them to him. And that was about 3 years ago I was able to get those. Well, it was about a year and a half to 2 years ago. Michael and his colleagues that worked with Borden, they formed this Facebook page, The Writings of A.R. Borden. And now all of his books and essays and white papers are on that Facebook page. Now, again, here's the name, The Writings of A.R. Borden. It's a Facebook page that you go to. You go to there. To access the materials, to access the books and the papers, you have to request to be a member. Now, they always accept everybody, but they just do this as a protective step. Is what they do is that you request to become a member, and then when they approve your membership, there will be a column on the left side that shows up, and you click on the Files tab. And that takes you to all of Borden's books and essays and white papers in PDF format. And folks, the information that is there is just phenomenal. Myself and others feel that when Borden's materials start to be integrated into the scientific and educational communities, and they begin to discover what he really had brought forward, that Borden will go down in history as another Nikola Tesla. That's who this man was. Now, why is he so significant to us? You've heard me in the past talk about that we're moving into this new quantum world. We're shifting and changing in our age. And we're going to learn how to become what are called quantum-based beings. We live in a world where we have these two paradigms of how we want to choose to live our lives. We can choose to live in a paradigm that's similar to Newtonian physics. Everything is solid. Everything is in state, everything is as it is. You know, DNA is established, energy doesn't shift and change much hardly at all. It is just the way that it is. That's Newtonian based with physics. And quantum physics came along and blew that out of the water. Quantum physics says no, everything is energy, everything is transferable, everything is movable, and energy can shift and change. And so what Borden is, they've taken that concept of quantum physics and taken it to the next step, is that everything that you see is created from human consciousness. So in essence, if you learn to think correctly, live correctly, pattern your life correctly, you have no limitations upon what you can do and what you can create. Now, I know that's a pretty big hypothetical statement, but so why don't we see more of it? Well, it's because that energy that creates this stuff doesn't come from the conscious mind. It comes from the subconscious mind. And in the subconscious mind, we have the memories that carry over from lifetime to lifetime. So there's thousands of years of memory residing in the subconscious mind. And that mind is programmed through thousands of years of hundreds of lifetimes to say, I can't do that. That's not possible. I can't make stuff just appear out of nowhere. And what Borden is saying, yes, you can. But to do it, you have to learn how to unprogram the old memory and replace it with a new program. Because the memory in our minds is like a computer program. Whatever program is there, you can erase that program and replace it with another one. But to do that from a conscious perspective takes time. It takes decades for most people. But that's where we're going. What we're going to see is probably in 20 to 30 years, we're going to find what we call miracles are going to be happening all over the place. Borden has even written a couple of books about that. He's written a book called Become Like God. He talks about how the miracles, all the miracles that Jesus did, how he was able to do them. Because Jesus knew and understood it was human consciousness and this powerful energy that comes out of the energy of love in human consciousness that is able to make stuff just appear out of nothing. That's how he could do all of his miracles. And he's saying, you can do this too. Do you want to learn how to do it? You can do it. Now, that's the significance of the role of A.R. Borden. And what's going to be happening is in the future, when after the currency exchanges are done, you're going to find I'm going to start moving into doing much more of those teachings. We're going to learn how to become quantum-based holographic beings versus old third-dimensional Newtonian beings. We're going to make that shift and transition. That's the significance of A.R. Borden and his relationship with Michael Lee Hill, and the relationship to the Anunnaki and the relationship to the gold. And so you're beginning to see the connection through all of this and where all this comes from. Okay? So with that, Blanca, I'll turn to you and then allow you to just share your thoughts and comments.
Well, it's a lot. And I hope people get excited by the possibilities of what A.R. Borden is pointing to. And the story, you've consistently recommended people to take a look at the Ancient Arrow Project and the Neruda interviews. Before the show, you and I were talking about how I think the Ancient Arrow Project came out in the late 90s, and the story itself is set up in 79. So, folks, if you think you're, you know, way ahead of the curve, actually, this has been established for a while. So it behooves you to take a look at this. And topics which probably in the 90s you didn't hear so much about, but now you do, like remote viewing. Now you can learn remote viewing, you know, on YouTube. But before you didn't hear about that. But if we had exposed ourselves to this material early on, we would already been prepared for this. And, you know, secret space programs, advanced technologies, you're hearing about that now. But this was addressed in the Ancient Arrow project. And that and the Neruda interviews are pointing to things that can even happen in the future. They're projecting like 50, 60 years out. So is that why you're encouraging people to open up their minds and take a look at the information that's in these publications?
Yep. This is where we're going. This is where we're going as humanity. And we are the ones that are getting to be on the front edge, somewhat you could call it the trailblazers of the new patterns of that are going to be developing for us of where we're going as a human race. We're going to learn how to step into being holographic quantum-based beings. And some will learn it early on, but as a collective, it's going to take decades for us to get there collectively, but that's where we're going. So it's not a question of if you're going to learn this. It's a matter of when you're going to learn this. I'd like to learn it now.
Exactly. Hopefully people get excited by these possibilities. Many of your the people who listen to you, they're on this what I call on this timeline because they open themselves up to the information that you share. You don't share run of the mill information, so there's probably people who are already open to this, and so so we're already recognizing some of, let us say, the obsolescence of the old matrix model. And so the best way to deal with that is to just take our energy away from creating or supporting that model and start creating the new. And I think these are some of the possibilities that that the information that A.R. Borden is sharing can lead us to.
Yes. You know, again, I shared, if you want this information, you go to the wingmakers.com website. You get their materials, you get the Neruda interviews, and then you can also go over to their blog site that they have, which is much more is on there. And the Wingmakers, there were the precursors that brought out the Neruda and the Borden stories. So they were the ones that gave the exposure to Neruda and to A.R. Borden. And then for Borden's materials, you go to the Writings of A.R. Borden Facebook page. And that's where you can find all of those. And folks, I just can't express this as, you know, where do you want to live? What kind of world do you want to live in? What kind of a life do you want to live in? You want to stay stuck in the old form of a Newtonian lifestyle where nothing shifts, nothing changes, and you're just slaves to this system? That's the Newtonian world, folks. I like to be free. And as we learn how to free ourselves, we become free when we learn how to become what are called quantum holographic-based beings. And the people that teach that the best are the Neruda issues, the Wingmakers materials, and the Borden writings. And that's why I express them so much. I've been around this stuff for almost 40 years, and I've never seen anything like this. This is the stuff that I feel like I've always been looking for. So, okay?
Well, just one more thing.
Yeah.
The Ancient Arrow Project is actually, I consider it a pretty great story. It was exciting, fast moving, fast paced, and yet it provided some very cutting edge information. Now, if people are going to jump into A.R. Borden, that's a little heavier stuff. So you may want to kind of tell about, you know, compare, contrast A.R. Borden stuff. You do have to take a little slower.
Well, when you read his technical papers, he always told Michael to make sure you have a dictionary sitting beside you. In essence, you'll read a couple paragraphs and you'll have to stop and say, now, what did I just read? Now, he does have a couple novels, and those are just like novels. But he also has, the technical stuff. And that you got to read slowly because, you know, you're being introduced to all kinds of new stuff, and there's even some new terms in there.
Yeah, but that's good. That's, you know, part of the challenge, part of the stretch. One of his novels that I read, just out of curiosity, is Fireball. Maybe you've read it. And this is actually a story. It's fiction, but it has a lot of very interesting information and the story about Marduk here on the planet and the role he's been playing here. So if people are intrigued by this, it's something they may want to look at as well.
It's the story of Marduk, and if you notice, the novel was finished about a year before A.R. Borden met Michael Lee Hill. So it's the story of Marduk pre-Michael Lee, and there's a reason why I'm saying that. And I asked Michael, is that Borden, when he wrote it as a novel, is it basically the same as the Ancient Arrow Project? In essence, it's a true story put into a novel form, and he said, yes, it is. You have to understand the story and history of Marduk, and I think I shared that in the recent program. Marduk was playing a role. In essence, he played the role as the bad cop for us as humanity for a reason. And it's when he met Michael Lee, he realized his role in that aspect was done. And that's where we see the shift take place. The shift from Marduk being the bad cop of the universe to being the white hat that's helping us free ourselves. And because he played a specific role, and I'm not going to go into detail to explaining that. I did talk about that in the previous program. But the whole role of Marduk shifts after Michael has his encounter with him, when he met Marduk. And even Dr. Lesson, in his latest book, Marduk, King of the Earth, he talks about basically the black hat role of Marduk until the last chapter. And in the last chapter, he talks about the Michael Lehill experience and totally shifts who Marduk is. Now, Dr. Lesson is coming out with a new book called The Anunnaki, Evolution of the Gods, how they are evolving and changing themselves. I go into much more detail about that in the workshops. And I will cover more of that later also as I get into the later parts of the content of the workshops as well. So you have to understand that you can't lock Marduk into a single paradigm, if that's the word to say. So, but the novel is still a good novel. It gives you the history and the background of Marduk's influence on the planet. And Borden would be the man that would know that.
Absolutely.
He encountered it directly. Okay.
I think I don't know if it was the last interview that you did with Michael Lehill. I do remember the first interview that he went pretty in depth of that meeting that he had with Marduk. So if people are curious about it, it's a good exposition of his experience.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, let's say this, folks. If any of you want to call in and you would like to ask some questions or you have some comments on Blog Talk Radio, this is the time to do it. Go in there to Blog Talk Radio. The call-in number is, it's 515-605-9356. You press 1 on your touch-tone phone. That kind of gives us a little flag that comes up to let us know that, yes, you would like to come on the air. So this is the time to do that. Okay. So anything else there you'd like to share with us, Blanca, on what the issues we've discussed tonight? We had those three topics. We had the Anunnaki in the Bible, and we had Michael, and then we had A.R. Borden. And then I talked about it, in the video, the workshop content video. So.
Right. The other thing is, if, sometimes people are watching their budgets, you have the Neruda interviews on your website, don't you? They're just something they can download.
Yes.
And
They're on my website in PDF format. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you're watching your budget, but you still want to expose yourself to this information, which, of course, we're encouraging you to do so, it's a great mind expander, if nothing else. And David's provided that as a resource for you. You can download them. And I would say if you really take this information to heart, you'll be really tempted to get the Ancient Arrow Project book from the information you get from the interviews.
Well, remember, the Ancient Arrow Project is basically the first part of it, and the Neruda interviews are the sequel to that. So
that's right.
That's a good place to start. And you can actually go on Amazon.com and you can order the book there in a paperback form, or you can go on to my website and you can download it in PDF format, or you'll have a link to download it in PDF format. So, yeah. But it's about, I think, a 300 or 400 page book. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So there are no budget excuses.
Okay. I did have a comment come in here on Facebook. This is any update on MetaOne's new white paper. It should be coming out any day, MetaOne's new white paper. I haven't talked much about MetaOne tonight, folks, but let's just say it's absolutely great what's happening. It just gets stronger and stronger, and the strength of the assets that are behind it, folks, you just cannot miss out on getting the MetaOne coins before they go public. So, okay. Well, I don't see anybody that came in and said they wanted to come on the air tonight. I don't see anybody that raised their hand. Do you?
No, I don't either.
Are we ready to call it a night then?
I think so.
I think we are, aren't we? So, okay. Well, folks, we want to thank you for joining us here tonight again, and then hopefully we'll have a program next. Thanks a lot. Good night.
Good night.